What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
It's a strange shift, isn't it? The parent who raised you needs some help, and you want to be there. With Care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Whether you're clear on the kind of care your aging loved one needs or still figuring it out, we've got support. Find background-checked in-home senior caregivers for anything from companionship to dementia care, or browse senior living communities, read reviews, even schedule a tour, plus access to safety checks to help with your peace of mind. Still not sure what's best? Our senior care advisors, who are all master's level social workers, can help you build a plan. For a limited time, use the code LISTEN20 for 20% off your initial care.com subscription. That's LISTEN20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care journey with confidence.
And I'm here talking to Pulitzer Prize winning musical theater writer, composer, lyricist, and playwright. And book writer. I never know how to phrase these musical theater terms, but you wrote
it's another
book
language for sure.
Right? You didn't write book. You wrote book.
Well, yeah, you can say it either way. I wrote book or I wrote the book for. Right. Either way works.
Sounds Russian. Wrote book. He wrote book.
He wrote book he for wrote strange book loop.
For strange loop.
He wrote strange loop and helped Donald Trump win election.
Election. Great election. Through strange loop, achieved election status. Victory of Donald Trump. The show is going to get canceled right now.
I know.
Terrible. We just got canceled.
Hello and welcome to the Katie Halper Show. On today's show, I interview Michael Jackson, who just won a Pulitzer Prize for his musical A Strange Loop. Then I talk to Ava Farkas, who's the executive director of the Met Council on Housing. And Michael and Ava talk to each other, and she offers him some great tips on how to organize for your housing rights. Please rate and review The Katie Halper Show on iTunes. You can also support the show on Patreon. That's patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. Again, that's patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow.
So Michael R. Jackson holds a BFA and MFA in playwriting and musical theater writing from the NYU Tisch School of the Arts. As a songwriter, he has seen his work performed everywhere from Joe's Pub to NAMT. He wrote lyrics and co-wrote book for the musical adaptation of the 2007 horror film Teeth. And awards and associations include a New Professional Theater Festival Award, a Jonathan Larson Grant, the Lincoln Center Emerging Artist Award, an ASCAP Foundation Harold Adamson Award, a Whiting Award, the Helen Merrill Award for Playwriting, and a Dramatists Guild Fellowship. He has commissions from Grove Entertainment and Barbara Whitman Productions and LCT3. Jeez Louise. And again, has just won a Pulitzer Prize for a distinguished play by an American author, preferably original in its source and dealing with American life. And can I be vulgar and say the financial prize? $15,000.
Sure thing.
So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Katie. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming back.
Yes, of course. I love talking to you.
Yay. And Michael, I mean, I'm not going to say anything, but I always like to think that there is that Katie Halper Show bump that just pushed you, nudged you right over the edge for the Pulitzer Committee. Where were you when you heard about this?
I was in this very bedroom, which has served as a backdrop for many a Zoom meeting, in this very blue bathrobe, and in my very blue imperialist white supremacy, capitalist patriarchy with strike throughs for each of those words, bell hooks t-shirt.
Wow.
That I've been living in one of these or another. It's my signature.
Yeah. Has bell hooks has she contacted you yet?
No, I think Bell's a little bit I'm out of her purview. She's just she's in Kentucky at the Bell Hooks Institute, last I heard.
Well, you got to do a presentation of a strange loop there.
Yeah, or maybe, like, you know, on the other side of this, there can be a production and somehow we can get her to come to New York to come and see it and then, like, eviscerate it. I always loved watching Belle eviscerate things.
I'm sure she would love it. Although, you know, she could say she enjoyed it and still eviscerate it. Like, doesn't she call Beyonce
a terrorist? Yeah.
Which but she also dances to her?
I know, but that's like when I fell in love with her because she can talk about a cultural figure and still enjoy their cultural life. So I would love for her to come and like enjoy the show and then tell me all the things that disturbed her about it.
Right, got it. So that would be, in fact, if she didn't tell you disturbing things, you'd feel like you would fail.
Oh
right?
My God, fail, that's right.
Yeah, okay, so we'll make it happen, yeah. Tell us about this musical. And were you surprised, by the way, when you heard about it? You would, I guess, I don't know the process, but you had known you were nominated? Is that how it works?
No, it's a little bit different. The only thing that I knew was that it had been submitted for consideration, which a lot of shows are, and like sometimes there are years when they don't award it to anyone or for certain categories, I think. And so I was aware that the announcements were going to be happening, but I just had assumed that I wouldn't get it because I just was like, there's no way. Because also in my mind, like, I just felt like a Pulitzer is something for like a later career, you know, writer who's very established or something. Like, I don't know what their criteria really is.
Right.
Like, the thing you just read, like, I actually have to now, it's so crazy that I now have to like go on the Pulitzer website and actually like learn about it.
Right.
Like, I knew what it was, but like, I don't know, like, the deep history of it. And
right.
Like, so it's like this whole experience has been like very stunning and exciting and shocking. And I like now want to like, I feel like I need to become like an expert in the Pulitzer Prize. Like I need to like memorize it.
Yeah. We should do an episode where we go over the history of the Pulitzer with you.
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about your musical, Strange Loop, which was great. And I saw it live at Playwrights Horizons over the summer.
In association with Page 73. They were a co-producer on the piece.
Yeah, and it was really good. And I sat next to the actor from Modern Family.
Oh, yeah, Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
Yes, he really liked it. Everyone loved it. It was really amazing.
That was the same day that Anna Wintour was there. She was at that performance.
Oh, really? And I didn't even know.
And she's like hidden behind her giant sunglasses.
Right. I probably couldn't see her hidden behind the sunglasses. And she's a slight lady, so a slight woman.
Yes.
But more importantly, your parents were there.
Oh, yes, that's right. They were at that performance.
Yeah.
And they loved it. Like, they totally loved it. It was like a very beautiful moment.
Yeah. And I got video of it, which I sent you, right? You have that?
Yes. I think you did, but like, it's lost somewhere on my phone. Like,
right,
it's like probably
it
in a Dropbox link somewhere that I like can't find.
Right. You're like, you sound like me. So tell us about what this musical is about as the person who created it.
Yeah. So A Strange Loop is it's a musical that I call it self-referential as opposed to autobiographical. But it's a musical about a Black gay man who works as an usher at a Broadway show while working on a musical that's about a Black gay man who works as an usher at a Broadway show while working at, like, it continues in on itself, an infinite sort of egress.
I just long for the days when musicals were quieter and more centered around the lives and concerns of civilized property-owning adults.
I am a Disney usher. I'm barely scraping by. My discontentment comes in many shapes and sizes. When I wake up each morning, I tell myself to try. I tell myself that I will make no compromises.
You write musicals?
Yeah.
Awesome. Have you seen Hamilton?
We want to know what's going on in New York.
Excuse me.
It's your daily self-loathing. I had some time to kill. I thought I'd stop by to remind you just how truly worthless you are.
Because after what me and your dad went through, to send your black booty to NYU. it appears you'd be just running around and without any direction.
Snagging a man is like finding affordable housing in this town. There's a long wait list and the landlords discriminate, okay? Each time I try to chart my course, wild horses throw me off by force.
I don't think you're being totally stupid. I do think you might be overcomplicating.
The same old story. Lurching after glory.
I'm not gonna stop asking until I get an answer, son.
And I fall short.
I want you to like my writing, my music, this show.
Blackness, queerness, fighting back to fill this cis het all white space.
With a portrait of a portrait of a portrait of a black queer face. And a choir full of black queer voices, tremble, clap,
and also bass.
That are casting spells to conjure up a
big black and queer ass American Broadway.
Big black and queer ass American Broadway. Big black and queer ass American Broadway. Big black and queer ass American Broadway. Big black and queer ass American Broadway.
Now, how you like them apples?
I call it self-referential because I drew from personal experience to write it, but it's not straight autobiography. Like, I didn't go, when I was six, this happened, and then when I was 12, it's like a little bit, it's like much more nuanced than that. And it's just about sort of a black gay man sort of coming to terms with who he is and sort of examining the prism of self in general, but black queer selfhood in particular.
I realize we're talking about what this musical is about and how it is based on your stories, but it's not totally autobiographical, but it's self-referential. And of course, the role of memory is important. How do you like that segue?
Really nice.
Thank you. We're going to hear this song called Memory Song.
It's a Cass album?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was Larry Owens and the Cass of Strange Loop.
Great. Okay, so let's take it away.
5'4", high school gym, sneaking a cupcake. These are my memories, these are my memories. Shooting hoops off the rim, slow on the uptake. These are my memories, these are my memories. After gym, the locker room, my eyes photographing. Naked me, measures in at 4.5 inches. These are my memories. These are my memories of one lone black gay boy I knew who chose to turn his back on the Lord. One lone black gay boy I knew who chose to turn his back on the Lord. Guilt and shame, Jesus' name, church every Sunday. These are my memories, these are my memories. Eat his body, drink his blood, communion buffet. These are my memories, sweet sour memories. After church, we're driving home to Radio Crackle. Jazz, blues, acro, Motown blues, and skin is a shackle. The one lone black gay boy I knew who chose to turn his back on the Lord. One lone black gay boy I knew who chose to turn his back on the Lord.
And that was Memory Song, the cast album version of that. And I'm here talking to Pulitzer Prize, among other prize winning musical theater writer, composer, lyricist, and playwright, and book writer. I never know how to pronounce, how to phrase these musical theater terms. But you wrote
it's another
book
language for sure.
Right? You didn't write the book, you wrote book.
Well, yeah, you can say it either way.
Yeah.
I wrote book.
Yeah.
Or I wrote the book for. Right. Either way works.
Sounds Russian. Wrote book. He wrote book.
He wrote book for Strange Loop.
For Strange Loop.
He wrote Strange Loop and helped Donald Trump win election.
Election. Great election. Through Strange Loop, achieve election status. Victory of Donald Trump. Yeah, this show is going to get canceled right now.
I know.
Terrible. We just got canceled. And he's talking to us about this beautiful musical. That song is really beautiful. And What are you working on now? I mean, that song was, that musical is very political and personal. And, you know, I know that politics is something that is very personal to you and you care about a lot. So what are you thinking, feeling, doing right now in those realms creatively? And also what's like on your mind today politically?
I mean, a whole lot, I have to say. I mean, in terms of just like what I'm working on is my next show that I've been developing with the Vineyard Theater in New York City is a musical called White Girl in Danger.
Nice.
Which is a kind of, it's in some ways, it's a little bit of an analog to A Strange Loop, kind of, in that it's about, it's a musical, a sort of satirical dark comedy musical set in the world of Lifetime original movies from like the 90s, like in the sort of universe of that, sort of broadly, and soap operas more generally. And because I grew up on soap operas, and so I wrote this musical set in that universe in a town called All White. And in the town of All White, there are people known as, they're the All White, who are white people who have these like amazing melodramatic stories that sort of are like their whole worlds. And then there are characters known as the Black Rounds, who are just black characters who are like basically extras that support the All White stories. And then one of the Black Round is a girl named Keisha, who decides that she has what it takes to be the protagonist in an all-white story. So she's the writer of the universe to make her be the protagonist, which she slowly does. And so she ends up having to sort of usurp the identities of her three main rivals, Negan, Megan, and Megan.
Right.
So three variations on a Megan.
Are they spelled the same way or different ways?
No, they're all spelled totally, definitely, and Tweely. Like they're each Tweely. Like one is M-A-E-G-A-N, one is M-E-A-G-A-N, and then one is M-E-G-A-N.
Got it.
Anyway, so, and then sort of chaos ensues as this black girl becomes the center of an all-white narrative. And so I'm working on that. And then in terms of like what I'm thinking about politically, well, obviously I'm thinking about COVID-19 and about the first responders and about the people who are sick, people who are dying, the people who have died. I'm thinking about how this virus has really exposed all of the existing inequities that exist across the globe. I've been sort of talking to people and saying that it feels like, it's almost like you walk into the kitchen late at night and you turn on the lights and then you see all the roaches in the kitchen. But in this case, the roaches don't run away.
Right.
They just stare and look at you. Like they've been there the whole time. All the sort of inequality and the like the racism and the classism and the ableism and the, you name it.
Right.
And all been exposed. And I'm just thinking about how this, and how that sort of comes hot on the heels of, you know, Bernie Sanders essentially losing the Democratic primary and like championing Medicare for all. And then suddenly we're in a moment when like all these people are out of work. They've all lost losing their health care. And now, like, all these things that sort of a lot of progressives and leftists and socialists have been sort of screaming and screaming and screaming and screaming about, suddenly it's now, like, those issues are, like materially, like, what's in the air and, like, what, you know, we need to really be figuring out how to address and how do we move forward. You know, if we're not taking care of our citizens in this country and across the globe.
Right.
So that's, you know, and meanwhile, there's like an election coming up and like Cuomo's tried and the Board of Elections tried to take Bernie Sanders off the ballot. And like, why? Like, it's just all
right.
Like all of it, like in Biden and Tara Reid and Trump is crazy. And like, just I'm thinking about all of it. But
yeah.
Again, just the roaches, all the roaches are just staring back.
Right.
They're not returning to hide what the lights are on. That's
right.
How I feel about it, right? This moment politically.
And is that, I mean, that seems like you could, that describes both kind of the effect of Trumpism and then COVID on another level. It's like there's a double, they're like two turning on lights or two unmaskings.
I mean, I think it's actually more than that. I mean, I just think that all of these issues have been on the table for decades.
Right.
So, like, and it's just, and now it's like, now we're being, like, I was talking to another friend who said that she feels like the unit, it's almost like the universe is putting us to a test. Mm-hmm. And it's saying, this is just the preamble.
Right.
If you fail this test, then like the next test, then I'm really gonna like mess you up.
Right.
And so, you know, like we have a choice right now to like learn a lesson and like to change course in a major way. Because like also like just looking at all these frontline workers and quote unquote essential workers, like these are the worker bees and the workhorses that like the wealthy are riding on and depending on. And like, if they're all getting sick and dying or whatever, they can't actually do work for you.
Right.
So even if you like don't think that like people should have like equal pay or whatever, or like commensurate with like what they need to live, like if they literally start dying, you can't get back to work.
Right.
You don't even know, you know how to pick your own food or kill your own chickens.
Right.
Or all the gross things that we don't like to think about that power our lives.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's like a very powerful lesson can be learned right now. And I'm hopeful that like the direness of the situation will trickle up.
Right.
To people who are like moving the gears and levers of our world to be like, oh, we actually have to take care of our people. Like we actually have to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
A real substantial your way around a virus that you can't see.
Yeah. It's really interesting because I was actually just talking about this with my co-host Matt Taibbi on my other podcast, Useful Idiots, the Rolling Stone one I do. And we had a virologist on and we were talking about how like things like there's viruses, there's disease, there's climate disasters, and those things are both like universal, but also very much fit into whatever inequities and inequalities already exist. So with COVID-19, for instance, the Black community, in, you know, percentage wise is much more hit by this than the white community. Than white people. I don't even know. That sounds weird. I don't know what the white community is anyway. You know, and there's environmental racism and, you know, look at New Orleans. And if you are poor, if you are Black, if you're brown.
Detroit. I'm from Detroit. And like
Detroit, yes.
It's hit Detroit quite hard.
Yep. Flint, Michigan, right? With the water, all those things. So you can't separate them. But at the same time, they are things that are somewhat universal. Like in the example you just gave, Michael, like you may not care about essential workers, living wage. You may not care about their like well-being, but it's actually, even if you're just a terrible, ruthless, self-interested person, it's in your own self-interest to support these people because they're right. The ones saving you or feeding you or whatever. So I do think, I agree, there's something kind of biblical in this great reckoning moment where, you know, like Job from the Bible, right? Like he's tested. That's a little different because the message there is to have faith, and we'd actually, we need the opposite. We need people to like wake up.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, it's funny, like it's, I like was fighting with my landlord because I'm not paying my rent right now. Mm-hmm. And I basically said to him, because there was like issues in my building that were pre-existing before this pandemic.
Pre-existing hit that are condition. Now like,
exactly. And I was just like, I know it's not your fault, but it is right. Now your problem.
Mm.
And I think that that's for me is like a global thing.
Like, right.
Although and globally it is actually their fault, but like, right. But like the issue, my point is just that like our fates are quite interconnected.
Yeah.
That's why like that movie Parasite was so great.
Oh yes. Great movie.
Like it's like their fates are just interconnected. They haven't figured out AI yet.
Right.
They haven't figured out the robots yet. So until they figure out the robots that can just do everything that like, you know, in the like low paid undocumented workers can do, or like Black nurses or whomever,
right.
Like until they can figure that out and how to automate all of it, our fates are completely interconnected.
Yeah. And it's also interesting because one of the things that you talk about in or A Strange Loop deals with is HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. And so the role of, you know, health issues, stigma. Obviously, with the COVID, there isn't the same stigma, right? Because what was HIV called before GRID? Gay-related?
Like gay-related
immunodeficiency?
Yeah. I think so. GRID, yeah.
And, so,
gay, and people called it like gay cancer.
Yeah. Has this made you think about that more or in a different way? Has it, I mean, because I can't remember, like, this is unprecedented for I think, all living people, right? I don't think anyone who's alive now has lived through something like this.
Well, I think there are some, like, very old people who might have lived through the Spanish flu as, like, children.
Yeah.
But even that is, like, different in some ways from this. But, like, and it's funny because I've actually been listening to some HIV scholars who, some of them caution against drawing too much of a parallel, and some people don't. I guess for me, the difference is that this virus is like much more communicable than HIV, and for that reason, there's actually less institutional stigmatization of it. It seems.
Yeah.
Though it is disproportionately affecting some communities than others. But at the same time, I can see how, like, psychologically you could make the comparison, because it's like, I talked to people who have gotten COVID and they like felt like they had done something wrong or like they had somehow failed. And like, and I think that psychologically can do that to you. And we're all like walking around 6 feet away from each other and with our masks and worried about droplets and is it on my banana that I picked up at Whole Foods or whatever, wherever you shop, and like all those things I think create this weird, you know, paranoia that might, you know, feel somewhat like what people felt during HIV before they really knew how it was spread, how to protect against it. But so I don't know. So I guess I feel I'm not as one way or the other about it as some people are.
Yeah. I mean, it's neither and both, right? I mean, there's so many differences. And in terms of stigma, like this is, like we said, this hits certain populations harder, but it's not a disease that started in one community.
Right. So there are those who are trying to scapegoat like
Asians. Right. Exactly. Right.
And it was funny, like, even somebody pointed out on, like, Instagram, like, I kind of as a joke that, like, they were kind of skeptical even of, like, you heard about the murder hornets?
Yeah.
Like, they're Asian.
Right.
Quote, Asian murder hornets. And, like, even, like, naming it, calling it that feels like a weird, almost like a subliminal message.
Right.
And so,
we gotta get some, like, European hornets. Wasp. Oh my God, wasps. We need a wasp. Right. Wasp. Waspy wasps.
Right.
We need to show some terrible wasps doing something. Wasp, you know, wasp on wasp violence is a real problem, Michael.
It is. And, you know, and I think that they're just fatherless wasps. I don't know.
Broken wasp terrible. Nests.
Broken wasp nests.
Yeah. It's real. It's a real thing. They have to pull themselves up by their wings, by their wing straps. Yeah. Right. we're going to play the rest of that beautiful song called Memory Song. And then we'll come back. And Michael, if you want to hang out with us, you can. Or if you want to make your departure and come back another time, we'd love to have you another time. But we're going to bring on Ava Farkas, who is working on housing. So either on the show or offline, you guys should conspire about what you can do about your landlord if you want.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I kind of have it under control, but it's just I needed to take a stand.
Right. Well, she can still give you some tips if you want. We can do a mock, a mock-up or mocking of it, role play.
Sure.
Okay, so let's hear the rest of that song, Memory Song, and then we will talk to you. We'll be here with Ava Farkas in a few minutes.
Dad is drunken on the couch while mom eats a pork chop. Daily bread mill, daily treadmill, won't ever stop. One lone black gay boy I knew who chose to turn his back on the Lord. One lone black gay boy I knew who chose to turn his back on the Lord. I am lying on the couch, I dream that I'm flying, flapping both my wings so hard to keep me from dying, with a crown of God-forsaken thorns on my head.
like all those black gay boys I knew who chose to go on back to the Lord. All those black gay boys I knew who chose to go on back to the Lord.
And that was Memory Song by Michael Jackson, written by Michael Jackson, from the cast album of A Strange Loop. Michael Jackson, again, is a Pulitzer Prize winning musical theater composer, writer. He has been on the show before and he graced us with his presence once again, even though he's now a Pulitzer Prize winner. He remembers his roots, his year-old roots when he came on the Katie Halper Show. And Michael's about to, you know, do his thing. He's probably going to get off this show and, I don't know, there's going to be a limo waiting for him with a martini in it to take him around the block. I was going to say to see a show, but then I remember we're living in a COVID world. And we're going to be joined by Ava Farkas, the executive director of Met Council on Housing. Ava and Michael, I want to introduce you guys to each other because Michael just brought up a housing thing. And Ava, you can give him some more tips. But he told his landlord this. What you want to tell her what you said?
Yeah. So can I just explain the situation, or is there not time to? All right. So basically what happened is a year ago, while my show was running at Playwrights Horizons, Con Edison told my building to turn the gas off because I guess there was issues with the pipes or something, and they had to replace all the pipes in the whole building. So then they turned the gas off, and then the building like had to hire a plumber and do all the stuff. So, and that, all that whole process of them coming in our apartments and ripping the walls up and all these things, like, and then finally they got toward the end of the process where they got the pipes replaced, but then they had to get all these inspections. And then right when they were about to get all the inspections, that's when the pandemic hit. In the meanwhile, all we were working with was a hot plate, and I stamped my feet and they gave me a convection oven. So then I let it go during the year because I was so busy with the show and other things and I was eating out like all the time anyway. But then once the pandemic hit, I'm like, now me and my roommates like have to deal with this hot plate all the time. And finally I was just kind of like, what's going to happen? Are they going to do the inspections? Are they going to turn the gas back on? Because it's just so hard to like make full meals on this. And so I didn't pay rent last month, and then I hadn't paid it for this month. And I wrote my landlord a letter saying, listen, I am prepared to pay the rent, but like, I need to know what's happening with this. This can't go on forever and ever. This is not a safe situation. Yeah, and he tried to like guilt me and be like, we've gone above and beyond and blah, blah, blah. And like a friend of mine died of COVID, like just through all this, everything. And like, this is the building manager, not the landlord directly. And so I just said, so then they were like, well, they said that they're going to have inspectors come tomorrow, which is today, which they did. And they said they're going to come back. Con Edison said they're going to come back on the 14th to turn on the gas, allegedly. And I just said, well, let's revisit this conversation once that's happened. Because if they don't show up and this keeps going on, I'm holding on to my rent.
Can I interrupt you?
No, I asked you.
Oh, it's okay. I love tenant questions, tenants' rights questions. So I have just one question for you. So do you know if you're in a rent stabilized apartment?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that's great. So not having gas is like a violation of the warranty of habitability. So that's a service you're paying for that you're not getting. It sounds like you haven't had it for about a year.
Right. Does it matter though that I have hot water, but I don't have a working stove?
Right. So not having a working stove is, that's the service you're paying for. And you shouldn't have to pay your full rent for all that time. You're entitled basically to like an abatement for that time.
Which is what I asked for.
That you haven't had, that you haven't had full services. So there's like a number of things you can do. You can withhold rent. You can withhold rent. Your landlord could take you to housing court, and then you can appeal to a judge and have a judge sort of sort out how much of an abatement you can get. You can also fill out a administrative form with the state agency, which deals with all rent regulated apartments. So you can file for a reduction in rent for decreased services with Homes and Community Renewal. And it's always really good whenever anybody has a problem like this. Gas is an issue that can take a year or more to get turned back on because of all the, because there was like the explosions in buildings. And so like there's many layers of like bureaucracy to getting the gas turned back on. So it's really important to report it as quickly as possible and to file for a rent reduction at the beginning, because the state will only give you the abatement back to when you filed. It's really messed up. So it sounds like what you're doing now though is like a good approach, because you can, and you can also negotiate that, but the best thing is for you to talk to your neighbors. So this is where organizing comes in, because you guys can negotiate a better deal if all together you're withholding rent, or you're all demanding and putting pressure on your landlord together, because you're all affected by not having gas.
Safety, so I would say
talk to your neighbors and try to make a demand together collectively on your landlord and take some type of collective action.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
There you go, right there. A little socialism in action.
You're welcome. And you guys are not. And also there is currently a statewide rent strike going on.
Yeah. So, no, I get that.
And so people are both being hit by the like economic issues of COVID-19, and many people already have existing issues in their building. And so people are, you know, already can't pay, already having problems paying the rent. And then if you're in a situation like yours where like you've already been paying rent for services you're not getting, you have the right to withhold rent and to demand those services along with your neighbors. And there's a whole movement happening across the state and now across this country that you guys can also plug into.
Great.
Look at that. And Michael, what did you say? It says it's not your fault.
It's now it's your problem. Mm.
You said that to the building?
I told that to the building manager. I said, I know this is not your fault, but now it's your problem.
Boom.
Yeah, and you're paying for a service you're not getting.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Wow. I feel like we all learned a lot just now.
Yes, thank you for that. I appreciate it, and thank you for the work.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Michael, are you going to go take your limo ride now?
Yeah, I'm going to go take my limo ride to find something to eat, because I had been checking my messages about the Pulitzer all day, and like I hadn't eaten anything.
Is there a ceremony that's going to happen?
Probably.
On Zoom?
Like whatever. Not on Zoom. I think they're actually going to try to postpone it until we're able to gather together again.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, great. Well, Michael, where can people find you online?
Especially you can find me on Twitter at the living MJ, as in the living Michael Jackson, at the living MJ, or at the living MJ. My website is thelivingmichaeljackson.com, and my Instagram is the living Michael Jackson. So that's my brand.
Great. That is your brand. And where's the Strange Loop coming next?
It's scheduled to go out of town to the Woolly Mammoth Theater Company in Washington, D.C. in the fall. Obviously, that's pending world events, but right now it's scheduled to be there in October, I believe, September, October. And who knows beyond that, but that's right now where Strange Loop is. Right. But you can find that. Also, I'd love if people consider buying Strange Loop. It's available wherever you buy music or find music. Buying it is better than streaming it, but streaming it is okay.
Right.
If that's what you got. But a Strange Loop, an original cast album, available on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, Amazon Music, although I think we're not dealing with Amazon right now.
Oh yeah, no, but like, dead to all, us.
Yeah, like all of that stuff. So wherever you find music, cast album.
Great, thank you so much, Michael Jackson, Pulitzer Prize winner. And make sure you listen to see Strange Loop, his great musical.
Thank you so much, Katie. It was a pleasure to be on with you.
Thank you. You too. See you soon, I hope.
Yes, take care.
Bye.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Thanks for your advice.
And again, Ava Farkas, welcome. Thank you for coming. I know you're a big fan of Michael Jackson, both the living and the dead Michael Jackson. Tell us what's happening in the world of housing and organizing. Cuomo has been getting a lot of love for some reason. People, I think, really like how decisive he is. I think the bar is so low.
He can read PowerPoints.
What'd you say?
He can read PowerPoints, yeah, very effectively.
He can read PowerPoints, and he doesn't suggest injecting bleach. So I think people think he's like quite a brilliant man. He just announced that maybe they're reimagining schools, maybe with the Gates Foundation, which is, of course, scary to me. But you, as someone who is the head of this great housing and tenant rights organization, tell us what's happening on that front.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I think we have a very different like experience of Governor Cuomo. You know, I was looking into like information about the budget and, you know, jogging my memory about recently, you know, the budget that was passed in the beginning of April as an example of like his failure of leadership. So in the midst of the epidemic that was already, you know, happening in early April, he passed an austerity budget, cut money for Medicaid, provided no additional money to deal with the homelessness crisis, to help repair the crumbling public housing across the state. And he's always had this 2% like artificial spending cap. So he has gotten the legislature to like agree that they will never increase the size of the budget more than 2% every year. And this is just like fiscal conservatism. Right. You know, it's not a law, but the legislature acts as if this is a law that that it is imposed on their budget process.
Right.
And it's because he doesn't want to tax the wealthy of New York State. So instead of taxing the rich, he is making everyday New Yorkers and the poor like pay for the money that we don't have, and is cutting programs. And then what's more, he gave himself special powers to continue to cut essential services throughout the rest of the fiscal year if there's a shortfall in tax revenue. So there's definitely going to be a shortfall because of this crisis. So there's just going to be more austerity and more cuts happening. So, you know, in the housing world where, you know, we are grappling with like the homelessness crisis, there's 93,000 homeless New Yorkers across the state. And without like permanent housing for them, like this health crisis is just going to get exponentially worse. Like already we see shelters are a place where like people are being infected. And so, you know, he has no solution to that. There's no additional money in the budget to deal with homelessness. The state of public housing, where there's mold, where people have to crowd into like one elevator because the other elevators are not working, are like further exacerbating this health crisis. So, yeah, I mean, I just think that Cuomo is really getting a lot of credit that he doesn't deserve when he is a fiscal conservative, when he's pushing austerity, and when he's not really coming up with real solutions to the crises that we face in housing and many other areas of life.
And of course, it's a myth that you can be a fiscal conservative and social liberal, because for better or for worse, the way that works is it hits people of color more than white people. I mean, that's just the way it works, numerically speaking. And so even though I think it's inhumane no matter what, I think fiscal conservatism is inhumane no matter what, but it's not even like, you're not even being true to your principles of kind of like believing in a racial, post-racial meritocracy. Like it doesn't even exist when you're fiscally conservative. But we need to keep our eye on the Cuomos out there too. And you don't just get away with being, you're not good just because you don't say things that are as offensive or stupid as Trump. Ava, what is the, what are things that Cuomo could do? What are things that you guys are asking him to do that he's not doing? What can people do now, especially because organizing is so different in this post-COVID world?
So we're asking Cuomo for three things. We're asking him to cancel rents for 4 months, cancel rents and mortgages for 4 months or the duration of this crisis, whichever is longer. We're asking him to freeze rents. So we don't want anyone to see a rent increase when people have to go back to paying rent. And we want to reclaim homes. We want homeless New Yorkers to be immediately housed in hotel rooms. We want money to go to reinvesting in public housing. And we also need like an ambitious new plan for social housing, new housing construction to house all the New Yorkers that need permanent housing that's affordable. So we have like both policy and budgetary demands for the governor, but canceling rent is really, you know, I think one of the most immediate demands. And we've been organizing in a lot of creative ways. So I was part of a car protest last Friday on May 1st, which was, you know, May Day, but also when rent is due for millions of New Yorkers across the state. And we did a car protest outside of his daily press briefing, delivered demands. We got some good coverage. There was also like a car caravan protest in the city. So there's a lot, you know, like people are hanging banners. People are putting signs in their windows that say cancel rent. People are doing a lot of creative things. And I think now also is like a fertile time for organizing, especially around housing, I think, because people who don't have essential jobs or have been laid off are at home now. Right. So I think people are thinking more about their living conditions and also are thinking about have the time to deal with things that they never had time to when they were working. So like there was a group of tenants in Harlem who are all going on rent strike because they can't pay. And one of the women said, you know, I used to have a very like time consuming job and I can never really be involved in organizing or activism because my job was so demanding. But now I have like all this time I got laid off. So I think a lot of people are now able to spend the time talking to their neighbors and like engaging in activism. So I think there's also like, now's a very ripe time also for organizing. And I think especially on issues of housing and
right.
and rent.
It's funny, you'd think that Andrew Cuomo would be more sensitive since his brother has been stricken with COVID-19. Although he apparently—
he's recovered, right?
I think he's recovered, yeah. He got very mad at a guy who suggested that he not gather like with his family in front of his house. I don't know if you saw that, but he's always very angry, Chris Cuomo. He's a great foil for Andrew. Uh-huh. He makes Andrew look very calm. What can people do who want to get involved in your organization?
So
what resources are you offering, conversely?
We're offering, so we have a hotline that takes questions about tenants' rights. So like the question that Michael was asking me, that's like, perfect question. If you have an issue like that, you can call our hotline and you can talk to one of our volunteers who can walk you through like what your rights are and what your options are for how to advocate for yourself and your neighbors. So we have a hotline. The number to that is 212-979-0611. And we're open Mondays, Wednesdays, and Friday afternoons. And then we also have tools and resources if you want to organize with your neighbors and you are going on rent strike. We have a toolkit that we can send you. You could also access it on our website, which is metcouncilonhousing.org. And we have a petition. We're still collecting signatures to Cuomo calling on him to cancel rents. So you can also sign our petition. There's a lot you can do.
And what about
on you can put a sign in your window? We really want people to put signs in their windows that say cancel rent.
Great. And what about on a national level? Are there, what are the presidential, I mean, what are the issues on a national level that you want candidates to adopt?
So there's Ilhan Omar just introduced a bill on this issue about mortgages. So there's that bill that would be really important that people on the federal level support. You know, Sanders was like pushing some type of like national rent control policy. So we definitely would hope that Joe Biden adopts prohibition on any new funding or new construction of public housing federally. And that's really important to repeal that. That's like been in effect for many decades and has basically resulted in like the deterioration of public housing and total neglect. Cause there's just a, you know, racist policy federally to like starve public housing nationally.
Right.
So that's really important to like lift the ban on that funding. Yeah.
And Bernie's back on the ballot, I gotta say. Bernie's back on the ballot in New York State.
The primary's back on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You didn't know that? Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Back on. Wow. Thanks to a decision made by Annalisa Torres, a judge who used to live in my grandmother's building on 92nd Street. I'm just saying.
Oh, wow.
A little time Great. Travel Katie Halper Show bump. Not to brag, I'm pretty sure, from those elevator rides on the Upper West Side, they add up. Okay, well, we are out of time. Time flies when you're having fun, but thank you so much for this update. And Ava, where can people find more information about you and Met Council on Housing?
MetCouncilOnHousing.org, and we're also on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
Great.
Thanks again for listening to The Katie Halper Show, and please support our show on Patreon. That's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. The Katie Halper Show is edited by Ted Reedy. Our theme song is by the band Cordova, and it's produced by Joshua Bregman.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.